And welcome back to Community Matters here on WRFA. Jason Sample in the studio with you. And for this portion of our program, we have a guest joining us via telephone. We have Dr. Sherry Sam Mason joining us. She's a professor at Fredonia State, and she has been quite busy in the past few years raising awareness about plastics and plastic pollution in water. A recent story that was picked up by the BBC featured Dr. Mason's research into bottled water and the amount of plastics that can be found in bottled water. But she'll also be doing a presentation about plastics and the Great Lakes and some of what her research has found, and that presentation will be taking place on Wednesday, March 28th at 7 p.m. at St. Luke's Church. To learn more about the presentation, we have Dr. Mason joining us. Dr. Mason, thanks for taking time out and talking with us today.
Thank you for having me.
So we wanted to obviously preview your presentation, and we'll get to that in a moment, but as I noted, you have getting some notice both nationally and internationally with the BBC doing a story about your research that you've done. The most recent of research findings came out that there's a significant amount of plastic found in bottled water, at least more than what some people may think. And I wanted to ask you a little bit about this research. Maybe a good place to begin is just summarize what your findings were in this research that you did.
Yeah, so we tested 259 bottles of bottled water from 11 different brands that were purchased in 9 different countries, and found that 93% of those individual bottles had microplastic contamination within them. The average count across all the bottles that we sampled was a total of 325 particles of plastic per liter of bottled water that we tested.
What does it mean when you have that amount of plastic in bottled water? Obviously, we don't want any plastic in water, but specifically, what does it mean when there's that kind of plastic in the water that we consume?
Well, to be honest, no one really knows, and that's why it was really encouraging to see the World Health Organization come out and call for a study looking at the human health impacts of this research, and I look forward to the results of that study coming out. I think, from my point of view, what was really surprising, and I think what's really important about this, is that in the fall we had done a study looking at tap water. And in tap water, we found an average of 5 particles of plastic within each liter of tap water that we tested. And to see that count increase from 5 to 325 in bottled water, that was shocking. And so it really, I think, highlights work that's been done by others, which is, that tap water really is cleaner and safer for us to be drinking than bottled water. There are exceptions, of course. Flint, Michigan is kind of the quintessential example here in the United States. But by and large, especially in developed nations and here in Chautauqua County, our water is extremely clean and extremely safe. And so I would really encourage people to turn back to the tap and stop buying bottled water.
Do we know if this plastic is coming from the source of water they're using during the bottling process, or is it coming from the actual bottle itself?
Yeah, so that was actually some really interesting results that we got out of the study. The intention of the study wasn't really we didn't sample water along the bottling process, but we just simply said, hey, if you were to go out and buy a bottle of water, how many particles of plastic are you likely to be ingesting from opening that bottle of water and drinking it? And that was the frame point of how we designed the study. But what was really interesting is that the particles that we found within the bottled water were largely fragments. And this is in comparison to the tap water study, where we found largely fibers. And to me, as a scientist, what that tells me is that there's a difference in the source of the particles. In addition to that, the plastics we were able to identify in bottled water were largely polypropylene, which is the same plastic that is most often used to make the cap on a bottle of water. And additionally, 4% of the particles that we analyzed had traces of industrial lubricants on them. So all of this kind of, to me, tells me that the plastic is getting into the bottled water through the actual process of bottling the water. It's not from the source, the water itself, but actually the process of bottling the water.
So again, we're talking with Dr. Sherry Mason from Fredonia State University, and she's done research into water and the impact that plastics have, not the impact plastics have on water, but the amount of plastics found in water. Your presentation this coming Wednesday, March the 28th, though, is going to be on a different topic. It's going to be on plastics in natural water sources, the Great Lakes, correct?
Correct, yeah. We're going to be focusing in on the Great Lakes and kind of the health of the Great Lakes in general. And it's kind of my approach to start with kind of a regional perspective, and then as we proceed through the evening, go from that regional perspective on the health of the Great Lakes, more specifically into our Great Lake, Lake Erie, and the work that's being done on a more local level there, including my work on plastic pollution within the Great Lakes.
So again, your presentation is going to be talking about plastics in the Great Lakes. You actually had research that led to legislation being passed about microbeads in the Great Lakes. Have you been able to follow up on research and find out if we've seen an impact already on the fact that there's legislation now that prevents microbeads from entering our water system? And have we seen the results of what that legislation has done?
That is a great question, Jason, and sadly I have to say that no, I haven't. I haven't been out in the Great Lakes to do sampling in a couple of years. We've gone from sampling in the Great Lakes to sampling in rivers, and my more recent stuff has been focused on other consumables. So I started with fish, moved to tap water, beer, and sea salt, and then, you know, the most recent work on bottled water. So there is a need now, I guess, to kind of backtrack and go back out in the lakes and do some more sampling.
Right. It has been only a couple of years, though, so it may take a longer period of time before you can see any type of change that this legislation could have brought forward. I wanted to ask you about plastics and what it means to the environment. We talked earlier about how it's difficult to know just what consumption of plastics due to human beings in a small amount, but there is research out there that shows what plastics in the environment can do to various species, right? Whether it be fish or anything in the food chain that benefits from fish and aquatic life.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you have large pieces of plastic that are very well known to cause entanglements and death. You know, some pretty famous examples of like sperm whales that were beaching themselves and dying, and then, you know, they take out their stomach and their stomachs are completely packed with nothing but plastic bags. So you have kind of those issues with regard to large plastics, but our biggest issue out here is really these microplastics, and the issues with microplastics are much more subtle. Microplastics are so small that they're not going to cause an immediate impact like death the way that macro debris will. But the thing is that plastics are really good at picking up chemicals, and they already have chemicals in them, and then they pick up additional chemicals on the outside. And so each piece of plastic basically becomes like a little poison pill carrying those chemicals into the food chain. And those chemicals we know have all sorts of impacts, not only on the organisms, but as those chemicals move up to the food chain and into people, they can have pretty dramatic influences as well. So these chemicals are known to be endocrine disruptors. So that means they mimic hormones. So they can lead to anything from increases in certain types of cancer to increases in childhood obesity, ADHD, autism, a pretty wide range of impacts.
All right. It sounds like we can go on and discuss this, but I know we're short on time, and then you've got to get to your classes and your schedule at the college as well, unless you're on spring break. I'm not sure. But my only other question is you're going to be talking about the health of the Great Lakes. Is it too late? I've seen a lot of reports that say that plastics are everywhere now, and there really is no way we can get rid of them. But, I mean, Can we see that there could be a positive change for the better in terms of the amount of plastics we see in the environment?
Oh, absolutely. I don't think the situation is that dire as of yet. I think really the data that's coming out is really just kind of a call to action. The reality is every piece of plastic we find in the environment ultimately comes from us, which means that we're the problem, but that also means that we're the solution. So as we reduce our use of plastic and our dependence of plastic in everyday life, that dramatically affects what we end up seeing in the environment. So this is really, this is a very solvable problem. You know, we had a very functioning society before plastics. You know, I have to remind remind our listeners that plastics didn't really make it onto the scene in a significant way until after World War II, and in many ways, and not until the 70s and 80s. I mean, I remember a time before plastics. I remember a time before bottled water, and we had a very functioning society without that. So I think it's very possible for us to turn the tide on plastic.
All right. Well, in order to turn the tide, obviously, this type of research is necessary. So thank you very much for the research you've done. Hopefully, I know that our research takes time. It takes resources, and you are getting all the resources that you need at your disposal to continue this research. Is there another project you're currently working on or a project that you have planned in the coming months?
Well, right now I'm on a United Nations working group that is aimed at how we go about collecting this data, standardizing that, and harmonizing it across the globe. So until that report gets done, now that's my focus, and then we'll think about what the next big project on the horizon is. But one step at a time.
Right on, very good. Well, we look forward to seeing your presentation again. Dr. Sherry Mason from Fredonia State will be in Jamestown on Wednesday, March 28th at 7 p.m. A free presentation. You will be joined, of course, by another guest we'll be talking to in just a moment. And I'm looking for the name here, Helen Domsky. We'll be joining you as well in the presentation. So we look forward to seeing that. And again, that's going to be at St. Luke's, 7 p.m., March 28th, free and open to the public as part of Green Up Jamestown. Dr. Sherry Mason, thanks for taking time out and talking with us today on Community Matters.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're listening to Community Matters. Again, Jason Sample in the studio with you. We have another guest joining us via telephone. We have an individual who will be joining Dr. Sherry Mason next week in Jamestown as part of the Green Up presentation we discussed earlier. Helen Domsky, who is the Senior Extension Associate of the New York Sea Grant and Associate Director of the Great Lakes Program at the University at Buffalo, will be in Jamestown to join Dr. Mason. And we wanted to talk with Helen to learn more about the Sea Grant program and how it has been helpful in research of the Great Lakes. So with that being said, Helen, thanks for taking time out and talking with us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
All right. So how long have you been with the New York Sea Grant program?
I've been with Sea Grant for 25 years.
Super. So you know all about it.
I hope.
Right. You probably have forgotten more than most people will ever know, but we'll test you right now. So basically, what is the New York Sea Grant? What is this program all about and why is it beneficial?
Okay. Well, New York Sea Grant is a partnership between Cornell University and the SUNY system. And what we work on is we support research, we conduct education and outreach to the public. So we like to say we bring science to the shore. So we work on science related to the Great Lakes, and because we also have offices down on Long Island, so we also in New York work on both marine and Great Lakes issues, but personally I am dedicated to working on Great Lakes issues, things like invasive species and harmful algal blooms and the ecology of the Great Lakes.
There's really no shortage of different research that can take place when it comes to the Great Lakes. We've seen that firsthand with the research Dr. Mason has done and the different avenues that she's gone down. But what's the, what's the criteria? How do you go about looking for projects that you can help fund and move forward?
Well, as in the case with Dr. Mason, we realize that there's a need or an issue that comes up. Microplastics and plastic debris in the Great Lakes has been there for the last, 50 years since we really started using plastics more heavily. But it's only been within the last 10 or 15 years that the need for research has really been brought to the forefront. We want to know, are these microplastics affecting the ecosystem and the life forms in there? So, ecosystem health might be a focus for our research funding, or invasive species, or changes in the fishery, or a new round of invasive animals that have come in and caused environmental change. And so we look at the needs of not only the lake ecosystem, but also what the community needs, the information people and legislators need to make the right decision to protect the Great Lakes.
All right. So do you typically provide funding just for our researchers who are associated with different university or colleges, or do you help nonprofit groups like, say, I know that you're more specifically focused on the Great Lakes, but we have the Chautauqua Watershed Conservancy here in Chautauqua County for Chautauqua Lake, which is a group of individuals who have concerns about the watershed of Chautauqua County. Is that an organization that could also apply for funding for research?
Well, primarily our research focuses on the Great Lakes, but we also look at entities within the watershed. So if a researcher is doing work both on the Great Lakes and Chautauqua Lake, you know, they're certainly welcome to apply for research funding, which is often the case. You know, a researcher doesn't look necessarily at a geographical boundary. They look at the entire watershed. So, you know, many times they're looking at rivers that may lead into Chautauqua or tributaries that may lead into Chautauqua. And so, you know, it's a more widespread research base.
Got it. So where does the funding come from? Who provides the funding, and what's the process that it has to be undertaken for it to be allocated to those who are seeking this help?
Well, our primary research funding is we are part of NOAA, the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration. So we do get support at the national level. And then New York Sea Grant also gets some state funding to run our program. And research funds can be allocated from the funding that we get, primarily from at the federal level. And we also do have a partnership with DEC for a small grants program. And so when you were talking about the Lake Association or a group that is not necessarily just university researchers, we do have this small grants program that allows for non-governmental organizations and community organizations to apply for funding on different topics.
All right. Is it sufficient funding? Do you find that you have enough funding in place on an annual basis to address all of these requests that come in once they've been properly vetted?
Well, obviously, we always get more requests for funding than we can, you know, than our budget will allow. And unfortunately, because of funding levels, we often have to turn people away who have very valid research programs. But we try to make the best decision. And overall, we've had very good success with the project that we've selected.
Super. And the selection does happen annually or as on a case-by-case basis as projects come forward?
Our major research call is a biennial call, so every 2 years, mainly because it takes a great deal of time to get these programs up and running. And so a researcher, it would put a great deal of pressure on a researcher to get a project started and completed within a year. So we work on a two-year cycle, and with the small grants program, that is typically an annual call because those are smaller projects.
Very good. It's fascinating. You know, this is something I didn't really know too much about, so you've really helped to educate me anyway, and hopefully our listeners as well. Again, we're talking with Helen Domsky, who is the Senior Extension Associate of the New York Sea Grant and also Associate Director of the Great Lakes Program at the University at Buffalo. I think all my questions are satisfied, Helen. Of course, if folks want to learn more about the program as well as how it helped Dr. Sherry Mason's research, they can find out on March 28th at St. Luke's Church here in Jamestown at 7 p.m. But is there anything I'm overlooking or anything else you'd like to include before we wrap it up?
Well, no. The only thing I would like to encourage people is, you know, to continue their interest and their efforts in protecting the Great Lakes. You know, we can only do our jobs if stakeholders are engaged and they're concerned. And, you know, that's the only way that the Great Lakes will be protected, if people make that extra effort.
Very well said. I really want to thank you for taking time out and talking with us today. Again, Helen Domsky from the New York Sea Grant and Associate Director of the Great Lakes Program at the University of Buffalo. Thanks for talking with us today on Community Matters.
Thank you, Jason.
And again, both Helen Domsky and Dr. Sherry Mason will be doing their presentation on March 28th, next Wednesday, at St. Luke's Episcopal Church as part of the Green Up Jamestown Initiative. To learn more about the Green Up Jamestown Initiative and that specific presentation, go online to greenupjamestown.com.